Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. I am Deonna Abraham Brando, host for Blog Talk Radio, Shedding Light. Back with us, as always, on Wednesdays, Mariam Jacobs, psychosocial therapist, is back with us today to further discuss comparisons between the U.S. penal system, mass incarceration, poor treatment of incarceration population, lack of appropriate treatment, and a whole variety of topics. We want to welcome Mariam Jacobs because she has been faithfully taking time out to come on the show every Wednesday to talk about a lot of these issues. She is highly qualified. She has done so much research. She's worked in the penal system, volunteer work, and she has recently written a book. So let's welcome Mariam Jacobs, psychosocial therapist from the Netherlands. Mariam, are you on with us?
Yes, Leona, here I am. Thank you for inviting me again.
Welcome again. We always enjoy having you on the show with us. So if you would please let the audience know a little bit about what you've been doing and what's coming up in the near future.
In the Netherlands, I work sometimes in the penal system with incarcerated people according the approach that I call deeper justice. And this approach is crucial for rehabilitation because it means healing behind the crime. So what I emphasize in my approach of incarcerated people is that they are humans and that they are not only a crime. And from that position, they feel safe with me and they can have the opportunity to open up to me. In our conversations, I help them to get to more self-insight, to more understanding of what has happened and what issues led to the crime. From there, they also develop responsibility, remorse, and insight in empathy in what they did to the victim. So this process is, in fact, a preparation before restorative justice can take place between the offender and the victim. For my job, I do in fact the same things. So outside, I have a paid job. I work with people with autism and ADD. And in fact, it's the same approach because also with these people, I meet the human being behind the label. So it's a universal process, and I think that everybody who has wounds should be able to go through this process in order to heal painful issues and get to self-insight. Besides that, I'm graduating for my master's philosophy, and I want to mention this too because philosophy helps me to think on a very nuanced level and also approach other people on a very nuanced level. And for my study, I've written a book about the American prison system. I have deconstructed the system because I wanted to know what is the foundation that lies beneath the system and how is it possible that there is mass incarceration? Where does it come from? How is it possible that we have laws, that we have amendments and still 2.3 million people are dehumanized, and also their families are indirectly, of course, dehumanized. How is it possible that in that system there are punishments that are a form of torture, and everything can happen within the law? So I wanted to understand how it works and how it's possible to have this system in a democracy, because the Netherlands is a democracy and the United States is a democracy. We are allies, we are Western countries, and so I wanted to deconstruct the system until the roots, and I did that. My book is finished. It's now in translation to English because I wrote it in Dutch. I want to publish it both in the Netherlands and in the United States. And I hope with the money that I earn that I can use that for free copies to prisoners inside the system, because I did it rather to earn money with it, but I think it's very important to bring this message. And I think that incarcerated people have the right to understand where they are, what's happening to them. So, and also families have this right. So that's what I'm doing now.
And I have to say too, Marianne, with your communication or correspondence with a lot of these prisoners too, I know that there are some that you have actually saved their lives because they had been so depressed. And we have a problem with these people that are incarcerated, the incarcerated individuals who are, they're getting harsh sentencing to begin with. They had problems prior to going in, whether it be addictions, whether it be, you know, psychological issues, whatever the case may be. And to go into prison and get the treatment that they're getting, which is not rehabilitating them, but it's increasing their psychological conditions. I know through the work that you've been doing that you have helped to save lives because of the, you know, the communication you've had with the incarcerated.
Yes, for my own, in my own life and in my own view, I think we are not allowed to dehumanize another human being, whatever he has done or she has done, because that's, you know, life for me is sacred, and we are not allowed to destroy that. So if somebody who is incarcerated has destroyed a life, then we are not allowed, in my point of view, to take revenge and destroy the life of the offender. I think it's our duty to do everything to heal that person. And of course, there are also incarcerated people who are dangerous and who maintain dangerous or who are not capable of taking responsibility or developing responsibility. But then we have to face that too. And that has to be based on examination and not just on revenge and retaliation. Because I think for me, revenge is a form of radical evil. And I don't, it doesn't matter where that happens. I mean, the fact that I know that it happens in the United States, we are on the same planet. So I cannot close my eyes and only think, oh, this is far away from me. So that's why I want to try to contribute to some more awareness about what we are doing and that we are not allowed to do it. And it's not the solution. And we know it. We have examples from my own country, but also the Scandinavian countries, what the solution could be. So there is proof, and the question is, why are we still accept this horrifying system? Because this leads to nowhere. This is not, you know, it doesn't solve anything, because the prisons stay full and mass our incarceration doesn't change. So something is going very wrong.
And this is why I was going to say, I was going to bring this up, because not just you from the Netherlands, but like I say, Frankfurt, from Germany and so many others from other countries, they're pretty much the programs you have, the sentencing, the communication, everything is so different. As you say, in the United States of America, there's too much hatred, too much vengeance, too much retaliation. And the sad thing about it is, when families are out for revenge, others get involved that don't even need to get involved. Lawyers get involved. You know, friends of the family get involved. All these prison officials and correctional officers that are connected in some way, shape, or form, they get involved. And to me, this is as you say, it's part of all this hatred, all this anger and racism and retaliation. It shouldn't be. If someone gets sentenced, whatever their sentence is, that's their punishment. But they want to go beyond that punishment. You know, they want to see somebody die a slow death, or they want to see somebody go crazy, or whatever the case may be. Why is it it's only in the United States of America? Why? What?
Well,
I
think a very important part of the answer to this question is that the United States is a class society. And because, you know, the prison system is only one of the issues that people are dealing with. There are also a lot of homeless people. Healthcare is very difficult to get access to. It's not free healthcare for everybody. And so what you see is that citizens pay their tax money But this money is not going back into society. It's going to the military. You have the biggest military. You have bases all over the world because you want to have power all over the world. So you have also a lot of enemies all over the world. And that costs a lot of money. And the prison system is a million-dollar industry. And I think that people have to understand that in the end, everybody is, in fact, a commodity for the corporations and the wealthy class. And people should protest against that, you know. People should protest not on a violent way, but they should really come together and become aware of this is not a way that they don't want to be treated this way. Everybody is used. If you look at the issue of racism, racism is a problem in the communities, but it is a tool for the corporations and the wealthy class. But because for as long people fight each other, they are not capable of forming one voice against the wealthy class and the corporations. So racism is a tool for the high class, because when people keep fighting each other, there is no protest. And people have to get to understand this game that has been played with everybody. You miss a social foundation, a social system. People are many, what I see is that many people think that being social, sociology is the same as communism, but it isn't. It's completely different. We have a social system, but we are not a communist country. So there are people in the United States who think that we are a form of communism, that we cannot choose our own schools or our own healthcare or our own hospitals and all that, but we can. Our government does not interfere with our private choices, but we do have a social system. So healthcare is accessible for everybody, and education is also accessible for the poor. Everybody can go to a university here, and that's not the case in the United States. When you look, for instance, at Norway, Norway has a very low crime rate, but education in Norway is even free for everybody. So whatever you have, whatever you earn or whatever, your kids always can go to the university because there is no payment. That means that all the people in Norway from the lower class, you know, low income to higher income, they all are educated. So what you, and they all have access to healthcare. So they keep healthier, they can develop themselves. And what you then see is this low crime rate. So it is a web of influence. And what you see in the United States is that education is very expensive. Students have very high loans, big loans. So if you are born in a poor community or in a poor family, it's very difficult to develop yourself, to stay healthy, because you have not real good access to healthcare. So, and then easier to get into the criminal level, on the criminal level, and get into problems and end up in a prison. So people should affect protest this, because it affects everybody, the whole country. You see now that affects the United States is in a way in a decline. The infrastructure is bad, and there's so much that has to be restored in the societies, and tax money should go to societies, to the country itself, instead of go to the military and to all these bases. Look what you had to pay for this war in Afghanistan, you know, and how did it end? It ended like it began, with the Taliban is again took over again. So you lost trillions of dollars in an endless war with all kinds of victims, and you have reached nothing. You only lost all this money that you better should have used for your own citizens, for your own country, for your own issues. And I think what you see in Northern Europe is, like in our country, we pay taxes, but it goes back to community. It's for our own benefit.
Exactly. You know, if you're right about this thing with Afghanistan, and it's not only Afghanistan, it's other countries too. We have so much, and after everything that happened in the last administration, I would think that they would be focused, the new administration would be focused on getting America together first before removing anybody from any place outside of America. We have so many issues in this country that have yet to be addressed. We have mass incarceration. We have taxpayers' dollars going out the window on the Department of Corrections nationwide, when in fact a lot of that money is not going anywhere but into the pockets of the very people who are supposed to be rehabilitating, who are not rehabilitating, but keeping the money.
Exactly.
This country is a mess, and it really needs to be reformed. The whole country.
Yeah, and I think it starts with that people are going to protest and don't accept anymore that they are used as commodities. They are abandoned. You all are abandoned by your own political parties. Whether you talk about Republicans or Democrats, it doesn't matter anymore. You don't have a real left-wing party. The Democrats in the United States, is you can compare it to our right-wing party. And your Democratic Party is almost an extremist party. So you don't have a party that fights for the people just by building a social system, taking care of your own citizens. It feels so sad that, you know, people, hardworking people who try to do the best, they are abandoned by their own leaders. And that's so sad. And that's why you also have mass incarceration. It's all, you know, mixed together. It's one big picture. And it's really in decline. I mean, when I read how many years are people waiting for a better infrastructure, for instance, and it's not happening.
No.
There's always this fight about there's no money. But when you see like Afghanistan, like Iraq, now what's going to happen with this economic war with China? It's going to be worse. Now America is withdrawing from Middle East. Now it's going to focus on Asia. I hear now messages here in Europe that Europe is an ally of the United States, but they also want a little bit more independence from the United States. The trust is also declining because they see what the United States is doing. It's interfering with all kinds of countries and it's preaching democracy. But I think when they want to call themselves a democracy, then I think they first have to start to restore the democracy in themselves, it has to be restored in your own country. 2.3 million incarcerated people are not allowed to vote. Here in the Netherlands, incarcerated people can vote because they are and they stay and will always be citizens of the Netherlands. And that's where humanity starts.
I just heard on the news the other day that the voting rights in Texas, I believe it is, and a few other states, they're actually taking it upon themselves to ban voting rights in a lot of areas. And here we have a United States president that should be doing something about that, because I'm sure if Donald Trump was still in office, he definitely would be doing something about it if it was something he didn't want to have happen, although he was for it. But he was determined to make changes regardless of who did what. And this is the way our current administration should be. They should be putting a stop to the ban. They should be stopping a lot of this stuff that's going on. And they're worried about going over to Afghanistan because what they did was going to go down in history. It may go down in history, but it's not going to go down in history in a good way.
No.
Because there's still a lot of people that trusted them, that they swore they would help them, and now these people are all being hunted down like animals by their own people because they stood by the United States of America in something. You know, it doesn't make sense. This country And also, when they see countries like yours so successful in their penal system, in the way the prisons are run, in the success rate, in the low recidivism rate, if any, they should be wanting to follow that. Instead, they're hearing about all these countries, but yet the United States, they still want to be the big bullies of the world. And because they want to be the big bullies, they're so insecure, they have to have that power, that greed, that fame, that corruption. And that's a shame, because if I used to tell everybody that I worked with, my clients when I did social work years ago, I would tell the young men and women, reach for the sky. You may not get to the sky, but you're going to get halfway there because you're trying to reach to the top. So if we have to reach out and try the same approach or strategies that other countries are doing to have success, then they should do it. But when they start to do something positive and all of a sudden the people out in the communities complain about it, they bow down like little puppets to those in the community instead of making up their own minds and doing their own thing.
And I think they do that because they are taught that way. I think, you know, when you look, there is so much control in the States. There is so much control in the communities by the police, but also, so, you know, there comes a point that people internalize this control and they start to control themselves. And then you get a sort of totalitarian regime. It's like, you know, with internalizing, I mean, you know, you have the slogan from War Child. It says, you can get a child out of the war, but how do you get a war out of a child? And that's the same effect with this control. You know, there is so much control. And people, they just are apathic. Can I say that word? Apathic? They have to wake
apathetic.
Up. They have to become, they have to become conscious. You know, I told you a while ago about Chris Hedges, who is on YouTube, and you have been watching it. There are lectures on YouTube. People who are listening, please listen to this man. He's an American man, come from New Jersey. He's also teaching in prisons, and he explains very well what is going on in the country and what should be done. I have listened a lot of lectures, and I've learned a lot from this man, and he also says there has to come a social system. Government has to take care of its own citizens instead of bragging, trying to bring democracy in other countries. You know, restore your own democracy and take care of your own people. And I think if that's not done, if this is not going to work, and I might be pessimistic, but I am at this moment, then I think, you know, if the United States only keep looking outside to other countries and start fighting there and interfering there, and when it forgets its own citizens, its own people, then it is going to be further and further in decline. And in the end, it will destroy itself. You cannot be a force in the world if you don't take care of yourself, you know? The country is not healthy at this moment. And it's so sad to see it because it is a beautiful country and there are so many people who really try so hard to do their best and they are not rewarded. It's really sad. I find it's a really sad thing. And the outcome of all this is, well, one of the outcomes is that you have mass incarceration. It's a shame and it's a big betrayal to people. It's a real big betrayal. I think a lot of citizens feel themselves betrayed by their own politicians.
Exactly. That's the truth. I actually agree with that. But I will say one thing. Being a leader isn't just about being a leader. Just like a social worker, it isn't just about being a social worker, having that piece of paper. The problem is, again, it's the way someone is raised, for one thing. The strength that they have, the security that they have, not being so insecure that they have to rely on so many other people to tell them what to do and what not to do, because they're the leaders. There's such a thing as leaders and there's such a thing as followers. And we have a lot of people in politics, government leaders, who are so insecure that they are more followers than leaders. But then we have these women out there And I will say, like, Alexander Cortez is one, and that representative, U.S. representative Omar, and there's others that are out there. Representative Senator Eldridge, William Brownsburger, Senator. These people, they're pretty much leaders because they're doing their thing, and they're not depending on what the public is telling them to do. But then we have so many others that are so insecure that they're afraid to make any positive decisions. Like prison reform right now is a major issue, criminal justice reform. And they can do one of two things. They can stand their ground because there's going to be opposition. They're going to have a lot of opposition to the prison reform or criminal justice reform. But they have to know what's right and what's wrong. And I don't know what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think first of all, I think that a lot is based on fear on all kinds of levels. There is fear in the community, there is fear for the police, there is fear in the prison system, there is fear for war, so fear for attacks. So we have to, protect ourselves. Why? Because you are on the other side of the ocean. So there is a lot of fear, and that's maybe what you see back in some politicians. They are afraid to lose their positions. The lobbyists have a lot of influence. Politicians who stop being a politician become lobbyists. So there is too much entanglement between economy and politics. Of course, there's always a little bit, but in the United States, it's too much entangled. Politics and economy are almost one. And when you talked about Trump, yeah, I think the positive thing about Trump was that he was determined. For the rest, he was more like a cult leader. But the determination, that's what you need, and that's what you miss. People have to make a choice of all levels. A change in mindset. And I think that's where it starts. You know, in the old days, you had these protests, like the Black Panthers, you had Martin Luther King. You know, those were strong people who protest peacefully and brought changes. And that's what you miss now. But that's the only way to make a change, because if the people do not stand up, then politics is not going to change, because they earn a lot of money. They are entangled to economy, so why would they change? It's the people who suffer from it, who are no more than commodities, who have to understand that in the free America, you are not free. You seem to be free, but you are not free. You are determined by corporal power. You are determined by corporal power. Last week, I told about this Dutch man who is married, he has children, and he has lived in one of the states, in the United States, for 4 years with his family. He had a very good job at a publisher. He lived in a very beautiful suburb. His kids went to school where he could pay expensive studies. But after 4 years, they decided to come home to the Netherlands, because he said, I do have a good life there because I do have money, but three blocks away from me, there's poverty, and I don't want to be part of that system. He said, and I am rich, and because living there in the rich world means that I also maintain the poor world, because it's like a pattern, you know. And I found it a very strong decision that although he had a very good life, that he said, I don't want to be part of this system, because I don't want to be one of the reasons that there is also a large poor part. That's a mindset. You know, then you have a pure mindset. And I think people have to stand up for themselves together. And that's, I think, what people should do. Like we had, you know, in the 60s or 70s, or when was it, with Martin Luther King, with Malcolm X, with the Black Panthers, but also all other groups, because the color doesn't matter in the end. You know, every color is in fact incarcerated by corporations, whether you're white or black or it doesn't matter. But people have to wake. People have to wake up. They have to wake up and see what's done to their life, to them, themselves. And then, if you have a change of mind, people wake, then you can fight for prison reform. It is a huge thing. And I think, you know, when there is like, when you have a factory and people work there and they don't get really paid and the circumstances are bad and all these people stop working, then the factory would have to close. And that's an example for how it works. If people say, this is enough, I am no longer captured by corporal power, then the power is gone. Because it's maintained by all these sleeping people. I call it sleeping people.
Mm. And that's what it is.
Yes, sometimes I say to incarcerated people here, there are more incarcerated people in the streets than in prison. People who are not really free to be themselves.
That's true.
That's true.
Because there's so many, even listening to you talk about all of this, people will listen, but what kind of actions are they going to do? We have been encouraging the people, the government. We have been encouraging people to call in. We've been encouraged people to write letters, to contact the media, to do anything. And I have to say there's a lot of advocacy groups and organizations actually doing something. But there's a lot of people who have loved ones inside and they expect everybody else to be fighting for their loved ones. You know, I can see them trying to get legal help, but to expect everybody to make calls to the politicians, the media, they can do it because success is in numbers. There's coalitions right now in Massachusetts working on, you know, abolishing life without parole. They're looking at abolishing solitary confinement and restrictive housing units. They're coming together in coalitions. But a lot more people could be joining these coalitions, could be getting involved, because it would happen faster and it would be more successful.
Yeah, and maybe there should be more oversight, you know, because there are a lot of reform organizations who all work on their own, and they should unite. There should be oversight, I think, when it comes to these organizations, that they don't also fight each other or, you know, compete with each other or only work on their own, but, you know, unite. And then you can have a very strong force against all this.
Mm-hmm.
And that's needed. What you see now is the way everything is arranged, also in these reform groups. Sometimes there might be small successes, but it doesn't really change anything, because the change has to be huge. Even the buildings, the prison, even the buildings, you know, the warehouses are evil. They are, because they are part of the system, of course. They are built, designed and built for mass incarceration. So a lot has to change. And when you look at the people who are the population of prisoners in the system, it's, you know, everybody who does not fit society can end up in prison. I mean, there are so many people who have issues, psychological issues or disorders. They should be in a psychological hospital, get treatment. People with a drug addiction, they should be in a hospital to get rid of the drug addiction. All elderly people who are in wheelchairs. It's crazy to have all elderly people in wheelchairs who are, you know, in the 80s or 90s, still in prison. It's insane. What are they doing there? It's a shame.
You know, you mentioned that, and I had an incarcerated individual from Norfolk Prison contact me about a week ago. And he was saying the same thing. He said, we have to fight for the compassionate release. We have to, because he said this. And he was talking about a man in their prison who was like 80-something years old or 90-something years old. And he said, what harm is this man going to do to anyone? You know, when they get to be that old, even 60 years of age, when they get to be that old, and there's even some younger who have had permanent damage done to them by the contracted medical providers with the Department of Corrections. You know, these people are trying to handicap these prisoners so that they can keep them behind those bars. But like you say, they need to put them in residential treatment facilities, not prisons.
Exactly. But then you can say, you know, the money that now goes to the military and to all the corporations as all that money should be used to open hospitals, departments of, you know, treatments and all that. But that's the whole problem. The money that could be used for that, that's, you know, that would mean that the money is used for society now goes to all these wars and military and all that on other countries.
Their priorities in this country are warped. They're so out of line. You know, they would be actually, in the long run, it would be cheaper for the taxpayers to pay for these long-term residential treatment facilities. And like you say, take some of that money and from the military and put it into the long-term residential treatment facilities. Because if they're bringing troops back from these countries, then they really don't need all that money. And they can be
something. But what you see, with the fact that these elderly people are still locked up, that's a huge difference between Northern Europe and the United States. In our countries, it's not the crime that's judged, but the person. When you only judge the crime and convict the crime, punish the crime, then there is no rehabilitation because the crime cannot be undone. The crime is the crime, and it will always be the same crime because you cannot undo it. So in the Netherlands, we say we judge the young person who did it, and that person can change by rehabilitation. You see, because in your country the crime is punished, that means that whether you are 50 or 80 or 90 and you sit in a wheelchair, that crime will always be the crime that has been, you know, punished. And that's why you have these elderly people in prison, which we don't have. We don't have that. And we have,
I was just going to say, I was interviewed by a death-caused AJC radio. This was on February 28th, I believe, several years ago. Well, but anyway, they had his name was Stan Stockerby. And he had his PhD, and he was on there as well, talking about the elderly. And there was they had a picture of an elderly individual, and this man looks like he is in his late 80s, early 90s. But the name of it was the elderly has been forgotten in American prisons, and that's the truth. That's what's happening in this country. But I wanted to just quickly go back to when you were talking about the government leaders. And their fear of losing constituencies. And I have to say one thing. When I look at a politician, and I'm getting ready to vote for that politician, I'm going to vote for the one that has guts, has strength, you know, is aggressive and assertive in his decisions and not weak when it comes to fearing losing constituencies. And I have to say a lot of people are like myself, are looking for someone that's strong. And look, as much as I'm not crazy about Donald Trump, I will say that's why he has so many supporters, because they see the strength in him. And I'm sure if he had more strength in this country, I mean in this area, with this new administration, with our politicians that are helping with this prison reform, I'm sure the constituents are going to respect them. Maybe not like them, but respect them because they are doing something that they know is right. And they're doing that. They're doing something that they're not. You know, if they lose some constituencies, they're still going to do it because this is what they think is right. They're going to get a lot more people on the other side to be voting for them. They want to see the strength.
What I think is that because I think Donald Trump, he also appeals to he also appeals to emotions. I think what you need is politicians who are rational thinking, who are clear, not manipulating, but rational thinking. We have, you know, their discussions. And Donald Trump was deterrent. Yes, that's what you miss. But what I found dangerous in him is that he is like a cult leader. He has a kind of a narcissistic personality because he likes himself and he fired everybody who disliked him or disagreed
exactly
with him.
This is another thing. People don't even listen to his niece. A family member knows their relative. And this niece has been talking about her uncle for so long and all the negative things about him and all the psychological things about him. And people are just passing by like this is some kind of stranger that's talking. But this is why I say we have people in this country that somehow they're sick. They're really sick because they don't get it.
Yeah, what I discovered when I did my research about the prison system, the system is in fact based on manipulation. And that's harsh. That's very confrontational. There is so much manipulation. There's so much lies. There's so much conspiracy ideas. There's so much mythical thinking. And when that's what also Trump did, when you don't, you know, when you start mythical thinking or there's too much religion also involved in politics, because I remember Chris Hedges explaining in one of his lectures that when Bush went into Iraq, he said that he did that because God told him to do that. If a politician says that, there is no discussion possible, because if God say that I can kill, that I have to kill my neighbor, then I am not responsible, but God is responsible. Those thoughts mm-hmm. are very dangerous, because that's what Hitler did in World War II. He could kill 6 million Jewish people because it was not his own responsibility. That's what you see with cult leaders. That's what you saw with Jim Jones in the 70s. That's what you see with how Trump is thinking. That's mythical thinking. When somebody says, it's the will of God, then he can do everything and nobody can, you know, disagree or argue or whatever. That is highly dangerous. But that's present in the United States. A lot of people think that the United States that's what he calls exceptionalism. It's, you know, thinking that you are an exception and that the country is a promised land, you know, that happened already when the Native Americans got killed and hunted because the land was promised to the colonists. That's how it started. And it's still, not for everybody, for a lot of people, it's still going on. And that's a very dangerous side in the United States, because then you also can say, hey, we can incarcerate 2.3 million people because God wants criminal people to be incarcerated and tortured. We need rational thinking politicians who have education, who are well educated, know what they are talking about, be able to be open for feedback, who are open for discussions, so they, you know, their own thinking keeps being sharp. That's all, and that's what you miss now. And if you miss that, you know, because if you are a democracy, and the democracy means that there is a room for discussion, because you discuss values. Like when you look at death penalty, that's based on values. You know, you can say I am against it for some reason, and I can say, hey, I am in support of it for other reasons. So we have to discuss them. There is no truth about a lot of these values. And democracy means that we discuss these values. But if you have this mythical thinking that we say it has to, or we try to sell values as truth, then it becomes dangerous, because then there is no discussion. That's what you also see in totalitarian countries, like with the Taliban now in Afghanistan. They believe the Sharia, it's all mixed up with religion, and that's why it's a dangerous belief, because there is no discussion, there's no openness, there is no democracy. And the United States says it's a democracy, but it's only a democracy for the wealthy people and the corporations, but it's almost a totalitarian looking regime for the people in the streets with the militarized police. Tell me, what is the difference between the military Taliban walking in the streets of Afghanistan and the militarized police in the United States with guns who shoot somebody who is running away and might be innocent, and all these accidents that are happening, people getting taken away in the streets for nothing. The fear, people fear the police, but the police should be there to help the people. They should not be the enemy, they should be their friend. So this is like the Taliban in Afghanistan. There's not so much difference.
The thing is, now we don't only have the Taliban in Afghanistan, but ISIS is in, and ISIS and the Taliban, they say, don't get along. So what's that mean? Are they going to all of a sudden get friendly so that they can, you know, go against the U.S.? Or are they going to start a war between themselves, and some countries are going to have to go in and try to stop that? This war that Biden talks about, President Biden talks about, it's not over. It's because he brought some of those people, or most of the Americans back, and some of the Afghanistan. The war is not going to end. It's going to be escalating. He knows this. This is another thing about our leaders. They want that. If this is going to go down in history, he feels it's going to make him look good. These are the type of mindsets that these people in politics have. Anything that's going to make them look good at a certain time.
Yeah, and I think that the manipulation is this. The people in the streets are filled with fear. You know, the politicians, not all the politicians, but a lot of politicians, they feed fear into the people. And the people say, yes, we have to go to war because we have to protect ourselves. So the people in the streets have fear. But the politicians and economy is going to war because of economic reasons, because the military is also privatized. So it's money-making business. Bombing that country is money-making business. And that's the whole thing. Somebody told me, somebody who I know is incarcerated with a life sentence himself, he told me the United States does not know what war means. It doesn't know what it means when a city is bombed, when women are raped, when families lying dead on the streets. Why? Because you are on the other side of the ocean. You only had this 9/11 attack. That's it. After the Civil War, you didn't have any war. You only fought wars in other countries. And that's because that's also making money, killing people, and that's the same pattern as what you see in the penal system. In America, they lock up the people and make money out of them. And they go to war, militarized, what I said, the privatized military is going to war to make money. It's economy. Now they might go focus on Asia because of, you know, China is growing. Is this the next issue? What's coming? Are they going to have wars there? First they had, in Latin America, they had Cuba, they had Venezuela, all these countries. And they said, oh, yes, we go free those countries, bring democracy. Vietnam, they didn't bring democracy. They brought so much torture and problems and issues and life broken and all that. That's what the United States is doing. Let them take care for their own country. Make your own country better and restore your own issues.
They don't know how to restore, they don't know how to make America right. So they focus on other countries that they can try to make look bad. But other countries are more humane than this country. I hate to say it. I helped a young girl one time. Her name was Promethea. And Promethea Assad. And Promethea was Lebanese, Egyptian, and Persian. She had a twin. She came from a family. Her father used to have a mansion, and across from the mansion, he had a place where he would sell his daughters, and they would hang them from the ceiling, and he was making money off them. She ended up leaving there. She came to the States. Actually, she came in through Canada, and somebody tried to rape her, and she ended up, a truck driver, so she ended up grabbing his gun and shooting him in the leg, and once she shot him in the leg, she took off and ran, but she ended up going to prison for 14 years, and she was in an Iowa prison. And when she got ready to get out, her counselor helped to get her to Massachusetts. And I got her set up with some doctors and some other things. But Promethea used to tell me how when she was a kid, they would go to school. The wars would be going on, and they would be going to school, ducking in and out of around the buses and around the track of those things where they have the machine guns and the heavy-duty tractors and everything. They would have to go to school, skipping and getting behind these things. And she said when they got ready to come home, they didn't even know if they were going to have a home to come home to, if their families would be alive. And unfortunately, her whole family was wiped out through wars. They were all killed except for one sister, her twin sister. Now, these two sisters, used to compete with one another. They both graduated at the age of 15 from Oxford, England. They graduated being able to speak 21 languages, sign in four languages. And unfortunately, she didn't know whatever happened to her sister. She didn't know whatever happened to her sister. Her sister was somewhere in the Middle East. But unfortunately, she ended up getting picked up, and she ended up getting sent back to one of those countries. I don't know. But it was sad because she said if she had gone back, she would be killed.
Yeah, it's so
sad. She hitchhiked to California. A detective in California put her in a safe house to protect her. But unfortunately, she left the safe house, and she was hitchhiking to, I think it was Los Angeles when she got picked up. She asked me, she had them contact me to have me send them, the people that were trying to help her, send her documents that of all the things that she was doing while she was here. And I sent them, and like 6 months later, they came back. They hadn't been open. So that's why I feel like she might have been sent back. But this is why I say we have, in this country, we have prisoners from other countries. You know, we have, and these people were victims at one time of their own countries, of wars. Their minds were messed up or whatever. But we have to have some compassion in this country. We do. There's no way in hell the people should have the attitudes that they have. I know there are victims, but there are also victims incarcerated who suffered as children or adolescents growing up. Compassion.
Yes. Yeah, and I think, you know, these are examples of a pattern, what you see when people get convicted in court, that the circumstances, the character is never taken into account. They only look at the crime. Like with this girl, what you say, they only look at the act, the crime, and they don't look at the human being behind the crime. And in fact, that's already where dehumanization starts. It doesn't start in the prison. It starts in the process before they go to prison. And that's, that's, I think, one of the crucial reasons why you have mass incarceration and why you have this system of dehumanization. The human being is not, I always talk about deeper justice, look behind the crime. That's, what we here in the Netherlands, we judge the crime, but we also look at the human being behind the crime, because there could be circumstances and we have to figure that out. And if somebody is evil, some people are dangerous and they stay dangerous, but you cannot simply say that from everybody. You first have to see who is this person, what happened, is he really a danger, and is he maintaining a danger, then he cannot be released. But in your country, people get a life sentence because of that one crime. And that's devastating, because then you have people, in prison systems who made one mistake, and okay, they do have to do time, but because, they are not seen as human beings, they lose their whole life. And they also cannot make it up to community. They can also not restore it for the victim, for community. And that's a very shameful thing.
Yeah. We actually have people, even in coalitions, even in advocacy groups and organizations, there are people who are actually like spies. They're involved in these coalitions to get information. And I know that for a fact. And this is what really upsets me, because they... Honestly, it's people are so evil that they will go anywhere to try to prevent something from happening. So we have people that are conflict of interest. They're trying to show that they're in favor of, while on the other side, they're trying to get it to other people that are going to be in opposition to it.
Yeah, this and I think, but what I sometimes miss in all these reform groups, and yes, I understand that this is happening because what I said is so much manipulation, so it doesn't surprise me what you tell me now. But what I really miss is what we should have to fight for is the fact we should have to fight against the system itself. That's what I also have written about. There are people who are against the system because there are innocent people incarcerated. But if you make a choice, you know, if you only ask in support of a certain group of the population, then you emphasize the system for other groups. I am against the system, and I don't look at what has somebody done or is he guilty or innocent. It doesn't matter to me. The only thing that matters is that the system itself, how it functions, that's evil. So even when somebody has committed a very severe crime, yes, he needs punishment. Yes, he needs to be incarcerated, but never in this system. I've been a victim of a prisoner who used me, and still I say that even this man should not be in this system. Nobody should, because the system should not exist. You need another way of incarceration. You can, yeah. You know, when you look at Norway, Norway also has a prison system. So if you commit a crime in Norway, you also get a sentence, but it's a humane system.
No, that's what I think.
And
long
I think if... Yes, but I think, yeah, so, but I think that if people would stop advocating for only a part of the system, you know, one fights for some certain punishments, you know, or against some certain punishments, other fights for the innocent ones, but I think then why not come together, unite, and all together fight against this penal system? Reform really should be an other system than this one for everybody.
You're right, and I will say one thing. They should pick five things that they want to all come together on instead of having five different groups or coalitions or whatever. Five things. End life without parole. End solitary confinement. Have voting rights for the citizens in prison. End restrictive housing. And end life without parole sentences. They should focus on those five, and as each one is achieved, then they can focus on the next one of those five.
Yeah, but I think, sorry that I interrupt you, but I think that if you fight against the system itself, then if that is changed, then all these issues, what you are now mentioning, then all these issues are abolished, because in a humane system there is no solitary confinement, there is no restricting housing, there are no innocent people incarcerated. So all these issues, what you're mentioning, it those are all pieces of one puzzle. If you only fight, let's say, against solitary confinement, it's impossible, because the whole system is built on solitary confinement as a punishment inside. You even have a building with all these cells for solitary confinement. So you never can abolish one piece of the puzzle. You have to abolish the whole puzzle, the whole picture, what you see on that puzzle. Because if you only fight one, because like, you know, in the current puzzle, the piece that is called a solitary confinement fits this puzzle, this evil puzzle. So you have to turn around the whole puzzle. You cannot change, because if you would abolish solitary confinement, what kind of punishment are they going to do use then? Because the system is based on punishment, fear, power, revenge. So what kind, you know, you cannot have one humane approach while the whole system is inhumane. So yeah, so I think All
they
these
need
groups,
to go after.
Yes, but I think that all the groups need one goal, and that is abolish the whole system.
We have to pick up on this next Wednesday because it's a topic that needs to be discussed. We're running out of time, and Marianne, if you can really quickly let people know how they can get in touch with you or how they can find your website real quickly because we are out of time.
Yes, I know. Website www.deeperjustice.com. I'm on Facebook, and I have also a Facebook page, Deeper Justice. I am also on LinkedIn under my own name, Miriam Jacobs. And I'm on Instagram with my name, Miriam Jacobs 67. And my Gmail is miriamjacobs67@gmail.com. Wow, that was quick, wasn't it? The title of my book is Lost in the System, A Deconstruction of the American Prison System. And I think it will be translated and finished in January because the translation takes a lot of time because I want it to be accessible for everybody. You don't need to have an academic study to read my book. Everybody can read it and understand what's going on.
We will pick up on this because I want to really get into the issues of the unions and the system and why it's so powerful. But Marianne, thank you so much for coming on as always, and we look forward to next Wednesday, 2:00 Eastern Time, from Marianne Jacobs, the Netherlands, talking about a lot of these issues that people in America need to be aware of or need to be participating in. So we thank you, and we're going to be ending this episode as of now. Thank you, Marianne.
Thank you, too.